WMAL News at 7. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Sorry, Virginians, you will not be getting a break filling up your gas tanks. The state Senate voted down Governor Glenn Youngkin's budget amendment to create a three-month gas sales tax holiday, so it's dead in the water. That was hours after the House of Delegates voted to accept the amendment. Delegate Michael Weber.
That way, at least, hey, I'm going to get punched in the face going, walking up and swiping my card every time I fill my car. I might as well get a little bit of a tax break out of it.
Opponent Delegate Danica Rome says the gas sales tax holiday would gut almost $500 million from transportation revenues. She says last year more than 900 million people died on Virginia's roads.
Our dead constituents on our roadway because we don't adequately fund transportation in this Commonwealth.
Youngkin responding on Twitter that Democrats failed to put politics aside for the good of Virginians for a third time. Also yesterday, the Virginia General Assembly elected two new justices to serve on the state Supreme Court, Fairfax County Circuit Court Judge Thomas Mann and Virginia Court of Appeals Judge Wesley Russell Jr. The new justices will fill seats that have been vacant for months after one judge retired and another didn't seek reappointment when his term ended in March. He RSVP'd no, but the House Oversight Committee's urging Washington Commanders owner Dan Snyder to reconsider his decision not to testify at a hearing next week about allegations of sexual harassment and a toxic work culture. Earlier this week, his attorney said he would not be testifying because he had a pre-planned business trip outside the country and never got answers to inquiries about the scope of the questions he would be asked. In a letter to Snyder's attorney, Chairwoman Carolyn Maloney said Snyder could testify virtually. He has until Monday morning to decide. You'll see lots of police in downtown D.C. today as the Something in the Water Festival is happening and on Independence Avenue Southwest between 3rd and 9th Street Southwest. At the same time, the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, happens. D.C. Police Chief Robert Conte.
We're working hand in hand with all of our government partners, HSEMA, the Department of Public Works, our fire department. I mean, there's really an all-hands-on-deck government effort to ensure that we have a safe event.
He says recruits from the police academy will also be out and about. Fireman or firefighter? A Maryland lawmaker is hoping the state's Firemen's Association changes its name to the Firefighters Association.
We have in Prince George's County, in Anne Arundel County, and in Baltimore County, women fire chiefs.
Senator Cheryl Kagan, a Democrat representing Gaithersburg and Rockville, says Maryland's association is one of only a handful in the nation that has been resisting change.
Maryland is looking a little bit like a dinosaur.
A vote to change the name to the Maryland State Firefighters Association is planned during its convention kicking off this weekend in Ocean City. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Phillies in both games of a doubleheader. The Avalanche host game two of the Stanley Cup final against the Lightning. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Arlington, watch out for accident activity on 395 southbound in the express lane. Southbound after the 14th Street Bridge, right at 110, that south exit ramp is closed, so do be aware of that. No problems reported in the main lanes. On 66 eastbound between the Prince William Parkway, exit 44, and Route 28, exit 53, there is construction alternating between the left and the right lane, so do watch out for some delays through that work zone. Also on 66 inbound and outbound at the Roosevelt Bridge, there is ongoing road work there, and only two lanes are getting by for emergency repairs. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and breezy on this Saturday. Much cooler temperatures, only reaching the mid to upper 70s, but very comfortable. Low humidity with dew points back in the 50s and 40s. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the majority of the region under mostly clear skies. Mostly sunny on Father's Day. High temperatures tomorrow near 80 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
This is the Saturday Morning Update. A very happy Father's Day weekend to you. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Some very interesting developments on the primary front, some surprises and some indications of strength for the former president. Even 2 days into the January 6th committee, his candidates didn't do too bad on Tuesday night.
Not too bad at all. In Nevada, Adam Laxalt, co-chairman of the Trump reelection campaign committee in the Silver State, 2 years ago, was handily nominated for the U.S. Senate. He's considered one of the Republicans' best prospects to make a net gain. And already, the incumbent Democrat is calling him Donald Trump's candidate. This clearly is going to be a case of where the 45th president is not on the ballot, but might as well be. And in South Carolina, the former president split 50-50. In the 7th District, Republican Congressman Tom Rice barely managed 25% of the vote in a seven-candidate field. The winner was Russell Fry, a state legislator who carried the endorsement of Donald Trump. Rice, you may recall, was one of the 10 Republicans who voted for Trump's impeachment, something he said he did not regret. This comes in spite of the fact that he supported Donald Trump virtually on every vote and campaigned with him. Nonetheless, that was not enough for the voters in a district that gave the Trump-Pence ticket 55% of the vote 2 years ago. But in the first district, Donald Trump's candidate, Katie Arrington, came close but did not pull it off against incumbent Congresswoman Nancy Mace. Now, she opposed impeachment, supported Trump on virtually every vote, and opposed creation of the January 6th Commission. But she was disgusted by the events of January 6th and said that they erased President Trump's legacy. He didn't like that and supported her opponent. A postscript. Nikki Haley, former ambassador to the UN and former Trump White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, were both in the camp of the triumphant incumbent Mace.
All right, John, so for the Tuesday primaries, those were the warm-up acts. Let's get to the headliner in Texas.
Oh, yes. Texas's 34th district was a case where history was made. Maya Flores, the daughter of immigrants from Mexico, legal, as she always reminded audiences, was elected the first Republican House member from South Texas in more than 40 years. This was a special election to fill an open seat. I might add that it's history-making in the sense that Ms. Flores becomes the first member of Congress who was actually born in Mexico. And there will be a lot of news on her. Political pundit John Fund said last week she would be a future candidate for statewide office. She still has to face a general election, and Vicente Gonzalez, a Democratic congressman from a neighboring district, will run against her in the fall election. Clearly, this is a sign coming so close to the border and winning with more than 51% over three opponents. It shows that the old political axioms and the Democratic dependence on the Hispanic vote just isn't working anymore.
So tell us a little bit about the redistricting. So she wins now, but she runs again in November.
Yes.
In a different geographical setup.
Yes, she runs in a different geographical setup, but most of the voters who are in this old district, the 34th, will be in the new one. In contrast, Democratic Congressman Gonzalez has never represented a single voter in the new district. So as much as it might be historically Democratic, it's not for Gonzalez. No one's ever voted for him.
So we are getting a little late in the primary season, but still a couple of key ones to come. Let's move on to Alabama, then we'll get to the headliner in Wyoming.
In Alabama, Katie Britt nearly won the Republican nomination with a majority. She got 46% of the vote and thus has to go through the runoff next Tuesday. She is the former chief of staff to retiring Senator Richard Shelby and former head of the Alabama Business Alliance. If elected, she would be the third woman senator in Alabama history, the other two being appointed and she being elected. Her main opponent in a primary considered tantamount to election is Congressman Mo Brooks. One will recall that Brooks had the endorsement of President Trump, and then when he said we have to get the 2020 election behind us, Trump unendorsed him. He was not going back, he said. He backs Katie Britt. She is the big favorite.
Liz Cheney, the congressman from Wyoming, is certainly front and center these days in the January 6th hearings. How's that going to play out for her in Wyoming?
She's got until August 16th to turn voters around and not seek revenge against her in a primary in a state that was Donald Trump's second best in the nation 2 years ago. It doesn't look good. The daughter of the former vice president trails in most polls, and her opponent, Harriet Hegeman, has been endorsed by Donald Trump, Kevin McCarthy, more than 200 Republican House members, and most recently, the Conservative Club for Growth, which is launching a five-city media salvo against two-termer Cheney. This is going to be difficult for her to pull off, to say the least.
In Georgia, the primary was settled weeks ago, but it's getting hot in that Georgia Senate race.
It certainly is. Herschel Walker, the great University of Georgia football great, former star with the Dallas Cowboys, is the Republican nominee for the Senate. In the last week, it was revealed that he has four children out of wedlock, all of whom were born when he was not married to their mothers. It looks very bad, and already Democrats were suggesting he's a deadbeat dad. Well, just because he doesn't talk about his children, he said, doesn't mean he doesn't love them or provides for them. He has supported them their whole lives, and they remain close. Now, one would think this would normally be fatal to a candidate, but it turns out that Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock is in Superior Court in Georgia because his ex-wife has brought charges that he did not make child support payments and was negligent with their two children. This issue is a wash, as sad as it may be.
Jen Psaki, the former White House press secretary, had years of media training. Her replacement, Karine Jean-Pierre, hasn't really gotten the momentum. She hasn't gotten the groove yet, apparently. And now we see a familiar face who's moved over from the Pentagon.
Admiral John Kirby, respected on all sides of the political spectrum as a spokesman on national security and famed for his briefings at the Pentagon, particularly after the tragedy at Afghanistan, is now at the White House to advise on the public relations aspect of the Biden administration's foreign policy front. Last week, he filled in for Karine Jean-Pierre and, again, got high marks from some of us who cover the White House regularly. Already the talk. Is Karine a short-termer, and is the admiral going to come aboard? We'll see.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Rick. We'll be back next week.
That's good. It is 7:19. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. A happy Father's Day weekend to you. And Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
The accident on 395 southbound in the express lanes at 110 cleared, and everything has been reopened there. No residual delays, and everything looks good in the main lanes as well, headed from Edsel Road to the 14th Street Bridge. So far, 95 running without delay from Stafford all the way in towards Springfield. You will find slow-going traffic on 66 eastbound between the Prince William Parkway and Route 29 in Centerville, with road construction there closing down various lanes. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and breezy on this Saturday. Much cooler temperatures, only reaching the mid to upper 70s, but very comfortable. Low humidity with dew points back in the 50s and 40s. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the majority of the region under mostly clear skies. Mostly sunny on Father's Day and Juneteenth. High temperatures tomorrow near 80 degrees. I'm 70 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
71 degrees in the nation's capital. 7:20, the Saturday morning update.
First thing each morning, O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor. Weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update, and I want to mention that there is a story that came out kind of late yesterday, and it'll be floating around and talked about quite a bit this weekend, so we thought we'd give you a little more detail because we have a little more detail on it. And this is from CBS News. So this is a report from CBSNews.com. Quoting, several members of a production crew with The Late Show with Stephen Colbert were detained Thursday night in a congressional office building near the U.S. Capitol. The group was filming a comedy segment when they were taken into custody, the company said. U.S. Capitol Police told CBS News that officers responded to a call for a disturbance at 8:30 p.m. at the Longworth House office building, where they detained seven people who were unescorted and without congressional ID in a sixth-floor hallway. After determining the group were not congressional employees and had been asked to leave the building earlier in the day, they were charged with unlawful entry. Police said a criminal investigation is ongoing and could lead to more charges. Capitol Police did not release any names and would not say if the suspects were with Late Show, which, like CBS News, is part of Paramount Global. But CBS said Friday the suspects were part of a production team which was recording a Triumph the Insult Comic Dog comedy segment on Capitol Hill on Wednesday and Thursday. The production team had conducted interviews earlier in the day that were, quote, authorized and prearranged through congressional aides of the members interviewed, CBS said in a statement. After leaving members' offices, the team stayed to film stand-ups and other comedy elements before they were detained, the company said. Now, that's the word from CBS. A couple things a little bit troubling here. The Late Show with Stephen Colbert gets permission from, apparently, now these are some other reports that are out there, Adam Schiff had granted the permission for them to come in and do the filming earlier in the day. Adam Schiff, who was the head of the January 6th committee, now, to film comedy segments about the January 6th hearings, I thought the hearings were supposed to be serious. Democracy has been threatened. But Adam Schiff is fine with CBS coming in and doing a comedy bit at the U.S. Capitol, a recording of, quote, Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. That's where they're going with that. There were other reports that the disturbance that was reported was the crew members banging on the doors of Republican congressmen. Now, I don't know if that's accurate, but that is one of the reports that is out this morning. 7:24, Saturday morning update. 7:30 news is next with Heather Curtis. Then we are back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. A Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. If you fill up your gas tank in Virginia, you will not be spared the sales tax. Virginia Senate killed a budget amendment by Governor Glenn Youngkin yesterday to create a three-month gas sales tax holiday. That came hours after the Virginia House voted to accept it. Delegate Michael Webbert argued in favor of it, saying swiping your card to fill up your tank,
at least for me, it feels like getting punched in the face.
Opponent Delegate Danica Rome.
I see us gutting almost $500 million from our transportation system and doing nothing, not a damn thing,
to help residents crashing on roads that she says need repairs. Youngkin responds to the vote saying on Twitter, quote, at a time when inflation and gas prices are at a high in the Commonwealth, Virginians should know that gas prices are brought to you by Virginia's Senate Democrats. Washington Commanders owner Dan Snyder has until Monday to change his mind about not testifying at a House Oversight Committee hearing next week about the team's alleged toxic work culture. His lawyer said in a letter earlier this week one reason he wouldn't be there is because he has a pre-planned business trip out of the country. Committee Chairwoman Carolyn Maloney said in a letter to his lawyer yesterday that he can testify virtually. Families of two U.S. military veterans captured by Russians while fighting in Ukraine last week week have messages that appeared on Russian state TV videos. Alexander Druki with this message for his mom.
Mom, I just want to let you know that I'm alive, and I hope to be back home as soon as I can be. So love Diesel for me. Love you.
Diesel's his dog. Andy Nguyen is the other American believed to be detained in the Donbas region of Ukraine. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Phillies in both games of a doubleheader. Traffic and weather next. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Gaithersburg, watch out for an accident westbound on the Intercounty Connector before Shady Grove Road. It's blocking the right lane, so watch out for a brief delay there. On 270 southbound between Quince Orchard Road and Sam Ike Highway, sinkhole repair work is taking up the two right lanes, so watch out for some delays there as well. And some slow traffic eastbound on 66 between the Prince William Parkway and Route 29 in Centerville with construction along the right side. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, partly cloudy and breezy with highs in the mid to upper 70s, 72 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:35, the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart and the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning and a very happy Father's Day weekend to you, sir.
Hey, Rick, thank you, and happy Father's Day back to you.
Thank you. And let's get to Ukraine. And what is the very latest on Americans who went to fight in Ukraine that are being held by Russia?
Apparently, incidental to combat operations on the 9th of June in, near Kharkiv, two Americans, one former Marine, one former Army Reservist, were captured. And this is according to a number of sources, and these individuals now are essentially prisoners of war and control of the Russians. So that's it. I guess that's what's going to have to be examined by the State Department and other folks relating to how to deal with the fact that they were captured, serving with a foreign military and captured by another foreign military. So that's the current situation.
And then the announcement that Brittany Griner has been detained for an extended period as well by Russia. So.
Right. And she's not the only one. I think there's another American, too. There's a couple of folks that the Russians continue to hold on to. So suffice it to say that the Russians have probably, I guess by all accounts at this point, probably about four or five Americans that they're holding captive to the current situation.
Let's turn to the funding of the United States efforts to support Ukraine. President Biden announcing this week another $1 billion, and that's on top of billions and billions of dollars. Rand Paul has some questions about accountability. Tell us about that.
Sure. So one of the notable things is all these checks are being written by members of Congress. And another thing that kind of went under the radar, Rick, is that not only are they giving them all these funds for military, they actually wrote off all the existing loan debt several months ago. It's like, hey, you know, all this money we loaned you can keep that. And so Rand Paul, you know, rightfully put forth the concept of, gee, we're writing all these checks. Shouldn't we be doing some oversight on where this is all going? And, of course, he met with very stiff resistance by a lot of the folks in Congress, especially those on the Democrat Party. Why there's resistance to that, I don't really understand. But the idea here is that, you know, we're doing all these checks. The other thing, Rick, and I think most people who are listening to us right now understand this, most of that money ain't going to be spent in Ukraine. It's going to be spent right in Washington, D.C. And I always talk about this regarding the Afghan War. The Afghan War, all these billions, they weren't spent in Afghanistan. They were spent in Washington, and a lot of that stuff went to defense contractors. So I think Rand Paul has the right idea to actually let's look at where this money is going. Let's assess what, if any, impact it's going to have, and then determine if we really want to continue to write more checks like they did yesterday. So this is what's lacking right now regarding this whole rush to support the Ukrainians, which I would argue pretty much a lost cause. It's not going to do much good without actual military intervention, which I don't think is a good idea.
Do you have a sense of the monetary support from NATO members. We all recall that President Trump was pretty rough on NATO and got them to pony up more contributions. Are those contributions going to Ukraine? Do you have any sense of how much NATO is contributing?
I don't have a dollar number, but I do know that there are a number of nations which are essentially providing direct support through military weapons, through support mechanisms. There's a lot of things that NATO nations can provide that relate to logistics, to things which would actually help and assist in those who are wounded. So I don't know off the top of my head, but I suspect that there's, you know, especially those who are like Poland. I'm sure Poland is providing as much support as it can. But it's very clear that these nations are somewhat stepping up, and there's still conflicts. As a matter of fact, you brought up the NATO issue. What's notable is while you see these nations stepping up to support, others want to join. So it's kind of a mishmash at this point, and I think that would be a good focus for someone to sit down and figure out is how much are other NATO nations providing compared to us. And I would say that we're still providing way more than the other nations are at this point.
There's a report out this week that President Biden was not pleased with Secretary of State Blinken and Secretary of Defense Austin when they were talking about winning early on. And the president, I guess, sort of wanted him to tone that down a little bit. Are you hearing those reports? What do you make of that?
So what happened, and I think this is a bit of a duality within the government, there are a lot of those who, to include General Austin, who have used very bellicose language we've talked about here on the program about a month and a half ago. I just don't think it's in our interest to go further to antagonize the Russians than we already have. And I am not for Putin. Putin is a thug, and I think it's horrendous what he's done. With that said, the idea of us taking a direct role in trying to make it worse, to potentially give him propaganda to justify his continued aggressive effort by what our leaders say is just not a good idea. So I'd like to believe that's what Biden was thinking. It was like, look, you know, while we may feel a certain way and want the Russians to be bloodied, and I'm not sort of saying that's U.S. policy, I'm saying that's what was reflected. You know, you don't want to be saying that, because the moment you say that, put it into the open air, that becomes propaganda value for Putin. We are the great boogeyman for the Russians. Everything we say and do are still seen within a Cold War light, that, you know, that everybody sees, and that's what Putin wants to portray, that we have never ended the Cold War and we're still an enemy. And I think that's what was the issue regarding the statements of Blinken and Austin. So at this point, I think it's abundantly clear we're funding the Ukrainian resistance, so it's kind of clear whose side we're supporting. You don't need to actually start giving propaganda value to Putin as we move forward with whatever we're going to do.
Turn to the southern border with Mexico. Yeah. There were numbers released from the Customs and Border Protection this week. 440,000 gotaways in fiscal year 22, there were also 50 on the terror watch list who were encountered in FY, fiscal year 22, and apparently not clear how many of those were detained or how many of those may have gotten away. But Secretary Mayorkas and the president have assured us that the border is secure.
So, and beyond that even, of those they captured, he still released another 1.5 million into the country. And get this, Rick, 25% of all encounters in May were of individuals who they encountered last year. Think about that. These are guys coming back again, guys and girls coming back again. So, of course, that tells us that there's a huge number of folks coming, most of which we're just not capturing. And my issue obviously is the law enforcement and homeland security issues that relate to human trafficking and terrorism. Inevitably, it's just a numbers game. If you're seeing those numbers, you have a certain percentage of criminal activity embedded within it, as well as terrorist or intelligence officers coming from foreign countries. And it's inevitable at this point that something's going to happen. You're with that level of open access any number of nations which have ill intent are going to use it to get people in. Heck, I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to find the Chinese eventually using the southwest border to help get fentanyl in if it becomes too difficult to get it in other ways. So it's at this point abundantly clear that the Biden administration has done nothing, beyond nothing, to the point of where I think they're almost enhancing the potential for terrorists to come through that border, thereby enhancing the likelihood of an event happening on the Biden administration's watch.
You mentioned fentanyl, and what I cannot understand is how the Secretary of Homeland Security and the President can allow fentanyl to be coming into this country in the quantity. This coincidentally, there was a story out of Miami. A sheriff down there said that you don't want to pick up a folded dollar bill if you see it on the street because some of them have been laced with fentanyl. I mean, there are people dying day in and day out from fentanyl overdoses, young people, teenagers, kids in school. And the administration doesn't seem to care about it. It boggles my mind.
Yeah, no, I right down in Sheriff Dave Decatur's department down in Stafford, that very thing happened last year, where one of his deputies literally touched something and was instantly incapacitated. I don't think most people understand, because, I mean, most of us don't come in contact with fentanyl. This stuff is nasty. You touch it, and you have the potential of at least being incapacitated. A large enough dose will kill you very quickly. And this is, to me, a method of warfare. The fact that they're introducing this to our nation, to me, with the level of potential and real fatal effects, I don't know how we're not taking it more seriously. But again, this administration seems to be not taking anything seriously in anywhere within their control of the government. So,
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, host of the Thought to Action podcast, what's on this week?
So we're doing some more on Build Back Better. Rick, you know, you're going to own nothing and be happy. So we're talking more about the great reset issues on a reset roundtable. So I think people will enjoy it.
It's Build Back Broke, isn't it?
And they got a new thing that's going to monitor your carbon footprint, your personal carbon footprint. So, you know, don't worry about those wires coming out of, you know, every orifice, doctor's orders.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, you'll find the podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you.
Thank you.
7:46, Saturday morning update. KT McFarland coming up next, but first, Michelle Murray's at the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Dumfries on 95 southbound after Dumfries Road, two left lanes blocked with a crash, and westbound on 66 at 123, accident now clear to the shoulder. Watch for delays remaining. Eastbound on 66 between the Prince William Parkway and Route 29 in Centerville, watch out for construction causing delays. An accident westbound on the Intercounty Connector at 370 Shady Grove Road has been cleared from the right lane. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and breezy on this Saturday. Much cooler temperatures, only reaching the mid to upper 70s, but very comfortable. Low humidity with dew points back in the 50s and 40s. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the majority of the region under mostly clear skies. Mostly sunny on Father's Day and Juneteenth. High temperatures tomorrow near 80 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
71 degrees, 7:47, Saturday morning update on WMAL. 7:50, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. A happy Father's Day weekend to you. And we are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and the author of the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, once again, honored to have you with us this morning.
Well, the honor is all mine, Rick. Thank you.
Well, as a former Deputy National Security Advisor, we certainly appreciate your perspective on Vladimir Putin and his invasion into Ukraine. He held a press conference this week, and what stood out to you about that?
We held a press conference with the president of Kazakhstan, one of his close allies, and he was asked a question about the special operation. They don't call it the war, the special operation into Ukraine. And he said a lot of things, you know, puff, puff, puff. But the interesting thing, as he said, is, look, we don't really care about Ukraine and the EU. The EU announced this week that they would be looking to have maybe Ukraine join the EU. He said, we don't, you know, if they want to trade with other countries, if they want to become a member of the European Union, that's really their own business. What is our business is when they become a member of NATO and when they have a security threat to Russia. So in his own mind, he's already setting out a place that you might go for a negotiation. Anyway, what it is now is time is not on Ukraine's side, and Putin knows it. He knows that the West is going to be getting bored, and particularly as our economy and our elections heat up in Europe and in the United States, as the demands on our economy and our budgets go into deficit and our economies go into free fall. He knows we're just going to get bored. We're going to look away, and we're going to find a whole lot of excuses not to help Ukraine going forward. France is already, for example, in that boat. They're not helping Ukraine, even though they're talking about it. And what will happen is that, Putin will just grind Ukraine into dust. That's what they did in the Chechen War. He did in the Chechen War 15 and 20 years ago. I mean, look, that's what happened in the Trojan War, is that after a period of time, the richer country, time is on the side of the richer country, the richer, bigger country will just grind Ukraine into the dust. The people will flee. There won't be one stone left on top of another stone, and it'll look like a moonscape. What will happen then in the West? Well, we're already showing we're not going to intervene. We know that. We're giving military assistance to the Ukrainians, but slowly but surely Ukraine is losing ground. And if the fighting goes on for a long time, Ukraine will be finished. And I think that's not only bad for Ukraine, not only bad for Europe, but frankly, it's bad for us. You know, it shows to the weaknesses of the West, short attention span, we're fickle, lack of resolve, lack of purpose, etc. I think what we need to do is change the equation so we flip it so the time is on Ukraine's side, not on Russia's side. So how do you do that? Well, get a ceasefire, however you can. Ukraine will have to give up some territory. Russia will get something, with the understanding that the Russians will think, aha, we'll settle for what we have, but in 5 years we'll be back. We'll take the rest of it in 5 years. But what you can do in those 5 years, if you play this long game of sort of flipping the time, is in 5 years' time, after the fighting stops, the West will rush to invest in Ukraine. Their countries will come in, companies will come in, they'll rebuild it. There are a lot of economic opportunities in Ukraine if they solve their corruption problem. And Ukraine, within 5 years, will be prosperous, fully integrated into the Western economy, and really kind of impregnable as a result of that. Meanwhile, in 5 years, what will happen to Russia? It's a pariah. Nobody's going to invest in Russia or do business with Russia. Yeah, China will buy their grain, and China will buy their oil and natural gas, and India probably too. But other than that, Russia will be a basket case. And if you assume, as I do, that by January of 2025, we have a very different American president who will stop the war on fossil fuels. By then, the price will be able to shove down oil and gas prices, because the U.S. will be energy dominant. We'll shove those gas prices down to $50 a barrel, and that means Putin's resources are cut in half. Even if he wanted to come back and make war against Ukraine 5 years after the fighting stops, he wouldn't have the ability to. That's how to deal with Ukraine.
Wow. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left, and I want to get to the kind of the feeling around the country. We've heard a lot of the comparisons of Joe Biden to Jimmy Carter, and kind of that feeling around the country of the Carter years versus our current administration.
You know something? I used to think, Biden, he's Jimmy Carter 2.0. But no, he's much worse. It took Carter 4 years to screw everything up, you know, to lose America's position in the world, to emasculate the American military, to have energy prices go through the roof, have double-digit inflation, massive unemployment. Jesus, Biden has done it in about a year. So he's, you know, Jimmy Carter is Joe Biden 2.0. Anyway, but if you look at where the country is now and where the country was in 1979, 1980, I was a grad student at MIT during that Carter administration, and you could just see all around the country, people were angry, people had long lines queuing up to get gas at gas stations, the price of gas was through the roof, interest, if you wanted to make a loan to buy a house or borrow some money, you had to pay almost usury rates, like double-digit rates of interest. And so the country had stagflation. The country had lost its will to be America. Jimmy Carter blamed everybody else except himself, but mostly he blamed the American people for that malaise, he called it. Well, Ronald Reagan came in with a very different message in 1980, 80 and said, we can fix this, and America's great. It's morning in America, not night. And he won overwhelmingly, took both houses of Congress in the election, and, you know, the rest is history. Reagan set us off on the greatest period of peace and prosperity in American history. So what happens come now? Come, well, the elections and the midterm, the Democrats are getting trounced. Even the Democrats aren't going to vote for the Democrats. And then in 2024, you'll have a very strong Republican. Why? Because, again, we'll have stagflation, there'll be massive inflation, unemployment, we'll same have, you'll same have those queue, people queuing up to get a product. This time it probably won't be oil, it'll be baby formula and food. And you've got an American president who either won't admit there's a problem, or he blames everybody else. I mean, we're soon going to get to the dog ate my homework excuse for why the economy is so bad. And the American people finally will just say, look, we've had enough. And the recent election of that Mexican-born American citizen woman who was voted in a special election to Congress from the bluest of blue parts of Texas is an indicator that an awful lot of Democrats who are listening to your show, Rick, they ought to be fixing up their resumes right now because they're going to be unemployed in about a year.
KT McFarland, always great to leave it on a high note, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Thank you so much and enjoy the Father's Day holiday weekend.
Same to you. Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.